She never wanted love, she wanted control. Sex was her weapon, submission was her game, and Malik was her canvas. What started as lust twisted into obsession, domination, and destruction. She owned his orgasms, rewrote his identity, trained him to crawl, beg, and worship her like a god. But when you break a man completely, what's left to dominate? And when the puppet starts pulling strings, who really holds the power? This is Come First, Ask Later, a raw, erotic, and dangerous descent into the darkest corners of sexual selfishness. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you, Come First, Ask Later. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The first hit always lands the hardest. They say love is a battlefield, but I never showed up to fall in love. I showed up to win. And winning for me was never about getting the guy. It was about making sure the guy lost himself completely. Control is my oxygen. The high I crave more than any drug. I don't chase butterflies in my stomach or late night, I miss you texts. I chase power. The kind of power that drips from the tongue when someone is kneeling between your thighs, willing to sacrifice their pride just to taste you again. The kind that twists its fingers into a man's spine and bends him to your will, slowly, deliberately, until he doesn't even remember the man he used to be. That's exactly what I saw in Malik the night we met, a canvas. Blank. Untouched. Ripe for corruption. It was one of those hot, humid nights in the city. The kind of night where everything feels like it's buzzing, phones, skin, hearts. The party was full of overpriced perfume and undercooked intentions. Girls posing for Instagram like their lives depended on it, and men scanning the room like wolves pretending they were sheep. I stood against the back wall, sipping on a watered-down gin and tonic I didn't even want. My body was wrapped in black silk, my thighs on full display, and my lips painted in the kind of red that promised both salvation and sin. I was already bored when he walked in. Malik. He didn't even notice me at first. He was busy being admired, tall frame, skin like melted cocoa butter, teeth so white it was almost rude. He wore confidence like a fitted suit, but I've seen confidence before. It doesn't impress me. What caught my eye was the shadow behind his smile. Something cracked beneath the charm. A little weakness. A little hunger. He was beautiful. Tragic, even. And that made him mine. I waited until his second drink. Men are easiest to control when they're slightly disarmed, still sober enough to speak, drunk enough to listen. I slipped through the crowd like smoke and leaned in, my breath grazing the shell of his ear. I want your tongue inside me before midnight. He froze. Stared. Choked a little on his whiskey like a boy caught sneaking porn in church. And then he laughed, nervous, unsure, intrigued. That was the moment I won. We didn't exchange names until after the orgasm. That's how I prefer it. Keep things raw. Primal. Names are for people who give a fuck. I'm not one of those people. Back at his place, he fumbled with the keys, tried to make small talk, told me he was a graphic designer or a project manager or something equally forgettable. I wasn't listening. My dress was already halfway off. He took that as a green light. The sex. Predictable. He came too fast, like most men do the first time. Whispered something about how good I felt, how I was different, how he hadn't been touched like that in years. I rolled over, reached for the bottle of water on his nightstand, and took a slow sip. No cuddling. No compliments. No round two. I stood up, pulled my panties back on, and looked him dead in the eye. You're welcome, I said. Next time, try to last longer than my Uber ETA. I left before he could respond. Left him sweaty, confused, half-hard and hooked. And then I went dark. No calls. No texts. No follow-up. I wanted to see what kind of man he really was. Would he forget me? Or would he crave me like a starving man craves food he'll never afford again? 4 days passed. Radio silence. I didn't flinch. Didn't scroll his socials or ask mutuals about him. If he wanted me, he'd come back. They always do. And sure enough, on the fifth night, just as I was lighting a cigarette out on my balcony, there he was, standing in the street below like a ghost summoned by my apathy. His eyes searched the window like they were confessing sins. I watched him for a minute. Let him sweat. Then I buzzed him up. He didn't say hello. He didn't ask how I'd been. He just stood there, hands in his pockets, heart on his sleeve. I've been thinking about you. My smile was slow. Dangerous. I walked up to him and slid a finger down the center of his chest. On your knees. He hesitated. Only for a second. Then he obeyed. I dragged him to the bedroom, sat on the edge of the mattress, spread my legs, and yanked his face between them like a woman starved. No talking. No teasing. No mercy. He ate like he owed me. Tongue deep, hands behind his back like a good little puppet. And I timed him. Made him go for 60 minutes. No breaks. No stroking himself. No begging. When he started to moan against me, I gripped his curls and pulled his head deeper. My thighs clenched. My breath caught. "Come first," I whispered, grinding into his face. "Ask questions later." He didn't come that night. But I did. 3 times. And that became our rhythm. I didn't ask about his childhood, his dreams, his traumas. I wasn't his therapist. I was his addiction. And I wanted to know how deep the hooks could go before the fish started bleeding. So I kept pushing, calling him over at midnight, making him wait outside just to remind him who had the key, slipping into his lap during Zoom calls, daring him to keep a straight face while I bounced on him slow and deliberate, whispering names that weren't his when he was inside me, just to feel the way he clenched up in fear, but never stopped fucking. He never said no, not once. And every time he didn't say no, I carved another piece of him into my collection. Because this wasn't just sex, it was training, and Malik was learning how to serve. But here's the thing no one tells you about control: it's never satisfied. It grows, consumes, demands more. And soon I wanted everything. His mind, his morals, his limits. I wanted to break him, rebuild him, then break him again. Because a man who'll do anything for your body is a man you can turn into anything you want. And I hadn't even started yet. Chapter 2, His Pain, My Pleasure. I never told him he was mine. I didn't have to. Ownership isn't declared with words. It's embedded in every silence, every prolonged stare, every breathless pause after I whisper his name while I'm wrapped around his face like a throne. It's the way his hands tremble when I touch him. The way his voice cracks when he asks if he can come. I don't say yes. I don't say no. I just smile and watch him drown in the not knowing. That's how you train a man. Not with sex, but with denial. I learned early that giving someone everything is the fastest way to make them leave. But giving them just enough to starve slowly? That keeps them crawling back, hungry and stupid, with that vacant look in their eyes that screams, "I'll do anything for more." And Malik, he was starving. It started with little things. I'd text him at odd hours, 2:13 a.m. on a Tuesday. "Come." That's it. No emoji. No explanation. He never asked questions. He just showed up, panting like a stray. Sometimes I'd let him in. Sometimes I'd make him wait in the hallway until the sun came up. Once, I opened the door naked and dripping wet from the shower. I walked right past him, towel slung low on my hips, nipples hard from the cold air, and from the way he stared like a dying man watching the last drop of water evaporate. He followed me into the bedroom like a shadow. Silent. Desperate. But I didn't let him touch me. Not that night. Instead, I made him sit on the floor while I lay back on the bed and spread my legs wide. I didn't moan. I didn't even breathe heavy. I looked him dead in the eye as I rubbed slow, deliberate circles into my clit, using the same hand that had gripped his jaw hours earlier. He watched, jaw clenched, cock twitching under his jeans. I came with a smirk on my lips and his name dripping off my tongue like poison. When it was over, I turned to him. "You can go now." He didn't move. "Malik," I said louder. "I told you to fucking leave." His mouth parted like he wanted to protest. Like he wanted to be something more than my toy. But all he managed to say was, "Okay." That was the first night he cried. He didn't know I saw. I watched him through the peephole after I shut the door in his face. He stood there for 10 minutes, hands in his pockets, shoulders trembling, wiping at his cheeks like he'd just failed a test he didn't study for. I came again to the sound of his silence in the hallway. The next morning I texted him. "Still want me?" The reply came in less than 5 seconds. "Yes." That was enough for me to tighten the leash. I started setting rules. Unspoken at first. Then written. Literally written. In lipstick on my bathroom mirror, on sticky notes inside his jacket pockets, on napkins I tucked into his back jeans like love letters. Rule number 1. You don't come unless I say so. Rule number 2. You don't make plans without checking with me first. Rule number 3. You tell me when you're thinking about someone else, so I can erase them from your mind. He followed every one. And when he didn't, I punished him. Not with pain, not yet. I used absence. Silence. Withdrawal. You'd be surprised how quickly a man breaks when you take away the only thing that makes him feel seen. Sometimes he'd show up unannounced, wild-eyed and wrecked, begging to serve. Not fuck. Not please. Serve. I'll do anything, he said once, hands gripping the edge of my sink, knuckles white. Anything, I asked, dragging a fingernail down his spine. He nodded, so I told him to clean my apartment in just his boxers while I watched reruns of trash TV and ignored him completely. He vacuumed. He scrubbed. He organized my lingerie drawer while I sipped wine and pretended not to exist. And when he finished, sweating and humiliated, I walked over to him, unzipped his boxers, wrapped my lips around him for 10 seconds, then pulled away. That's all you get. He whimpered. Yes, whimpered. Like a dog denied his bone after a perfect trick. But he didn't protest. He just looked at me with those eyes. The kind of eyes that beg without a single word. I fed him pieces of myself, bit by bit. A kiss here. A stroke there. A moan pressed against his ear, just as I gripped the base of his cock and stopped. Always stopping. Always keeping him at the edge of something beautiful. Then yanking him back into the dark. Malik wasn't in love with me. He was in love with the chase. With the agony. With the hope that maybe next time he'd be enough to break the cycle. But I had no intentions of stopping. Because this wasn't about love. This was about discipline. His pain fed me. His jealousy? Delicious. I'd leave lip gloss smudges on his bedsheets and let him wonder if they were mine. I'd come home from nights out wearing different perfume. Phone locked tighter than his grip on reality. He never asked. But I knew he thought about it. And when we fucked, because yes, I still let him fuck me, it was always on my terms. I'd ride him with his hands tied to the headboard, staring down into his eyes, whispering things that made him twitch and sweat. You like that? You like knowing other men want what's inside you right now? He'd nod, silent tears streaking the corners of his eyes. Then beg me to keep it yours. Please, he'd rasp. Please don't give it away. And every time he said that, I laughed, because it was already gone. Long gone. But he didn't need to know that. Not yet. I needed him broken first. Bent so far backward, he couldn't stand up straight again. Hollowed out, waiting for me to fill him with permission, purpose, punishment. And every day, every hour, every whisper of my name carved him deeper into that shape. I was building something with Malik. Not a relationship. A monument. To my power. To his obedience. To the woman I become when I see a man trying not to fall. And push him harder. And the best part, he still thought he had a chance. Chapter 3. His body, my battlefield. Sex is not just a release. Not for me. It's a weapon. A negotiation. A fucking ritual. And Malik? Malik was no longer a man in my bed. He was a battlefield. One I walked through barefoot, naked, and dripping with the blood of his surrender. I used to think there was a limit to how far someone would let themselves go for desire. That even the weakest would eventually crawl away when they tasted humiliation more than once. But Malik, he swallowed shame like honey. The more I stripped him of dignity, the more he gave me. And the more he gave me, the more I wanted to destroy him. He was mine now, but that wasn't enough. I needed him to know it. I needed to see it written on his body. Tattooed in the way he walked, the way he spoke, the way he looked at me in public with that hollow devotion. I wanted the world to know that this man, this tall, proud, perfectly sculpted man, belonged to me. So I carved my initials into his soul, one command at a time. It began with the collar. Black leather. Sleek. No tag. I didn't ask. I didn't explain. I just dropped the box in his lap while we sat in the back booth of a dimly lit lounge. The music was low, the drinks overpriced, and the only thing louder than the bass was his heartbeat when he opened it. His eyes darted to mine. I didn't blink. Put it on, I said. There was a pause, a long, breathless moment where I saw him do the math in his head. Pride versus need. Ego versus submission. And then, he reached up and buckled it around his neck. Right there. No protest. No shame. That's when I knew I had broken something vital inside him. And God, it felt so fucking good. After that, the rules deepened. Became more brutal. More beautiful. No underwear unless I said so. No touching himself without permission. No coming unless I gave him the words. And if he disobeyed? Punishment. Not the cutesy kind couples play with in bed. I'm not that girl. When Malik fucked up, and he did, often, I made sure he felt it. One night, he called me baby in front of his friends. Just slipped out casual. Endearing. Like we were equals. He didn't know I was behind him at the bar, overhearing every word. I didn't say a thing. Not then. But later, in the back of his car, I ordered him to strip. Right there. Engine off. Windows fogging. He hesitated. Big mistake. I yanked him by the collar, dragged him into the back seat like a rag doll, and mounted him. My nails dug into his chest, my teeth grazed his throat. "You don't get to call me that," I growled. His mouth opened. "Apology ready." I covered it with my palm. "You don't speak unless I say so." He nodded, breath ragged. Then I rode him like he was the last man left on Earth, and I hated him for it. Every thrust was a punishment. Every moan a warning. Every slap of skin a lesson burned into his flesh. And when he was about to come, I slid off. Left him there. Pulsing. Gasping. Broken. "I didn't say you could finish," I whispered, licking my fingers. "That was for me." He sat there, shaking. Hard and humiliated, pants around his ankles like a sinner caught mid-prayer. I kissed his forehead like a mother kisses a child and got out of the car without looking back. The next day he sent flowers. Apology orchids, as if petals could erase power. I let them die on my windowsill unopened. Because this wasn't a game to me anymore. It was transformation. I wasn't just dominating Malik. I was reprogramming him. Bit by bit, he started to forget what he used to want. What he used to be. He stopped replying to texts from his friends. He canceled plans without asking why. His job started slipping, missed meetings, forgotten deadlines. I didn't even have to ask. He just told me, eyes wide like a child begging to be scolded. "I think I'm falling apart," he said one night, curled up naked at the foot of my bed. I brushed his hair out of his face. "No," I whispered. "You're falling in." He looked up at me like I was salvation. Like every piece of his ruin was some kind of divine architecture. And maybe it was. I started keeping a journal. Not of my thoughts, fuck that, but of his reactions. What made him flinch? What made him moan? What broke him down the fastest? It became a science. A blueprint. And with every new page, I built a better version of obedience. Like the night I invited another man over, right in front of him. I didn't fuck the guy. Didn't even kiss him. I just made Malik sit on the floor, eyes on me, while I flirted shamelessly in his own apartment. I touched my neck. I laughed too loud. I leaned in close and whispered things I knew would twist knives into his chest. Malik said nothing. He watched. Bled. And when the man left, I turned to him and asked, "Did you enjoy the show?" He shook his head. So I grabbed his jaw hard. "Then maybe next time, earn a better role." He cried again that night. I let him. Tears are confessions. Tears mean I own you. After that, Malik started doing things without me asking. He sent photos of himself kneeling at home when I wasn't there. He bought me lingerie I never asked for. He wrote me letters, long, desperate odes to a woman who hadn't said, "I love you" once, but had taken everything from him. And in those letters, I saw it. The shift. He wasn't Malik anymore. He was mine. Not a boyfriend. Not a partner. Not even a man. He was a reflection of my darkest desires. And I wasn't even close to done with him. Chapter 4. Breaking point was always the goal. Some women want flowers. I want obedience. Not the half-assed kind you get when a man's trying to get laid. I mean pure, no questions, no ego, full-body submission. The kind that turns a man's spine into wet paper when I walk into the room. The kind that rewires his heartbeat to sync with my voice. And Malik? He was almost perfect. Almost. But almost isn't enough. I don't want devotion. I want dependency. I want a man to fall apart without me. To forget what air feels like unless he's inhaling it from between my thighs. I want his happiness to be a reward I dangle just out of reach. And Malik was teetering, a ragged breath away from full collapse. And I needed to push. Just. A little. Harder. It started with the phone. I made him change the wallpaper to a photo of my ass. No face. Just cheeks glistening, thighs spread, his collar hanging from my fingers. Every time he unlocked his phone, I wanted it to sting. I added myself to his face ID, then deleted his passcode, then locked him out. "I'll give you access when you've earned it," I told him, watching his pupils dilate like a dog hearing its master's voice. And he thanked me, actually said thank you like I'd done him a favor. But that was just a warm-up. What came next? That was the test. I introduced him to pain. Not the rough sex kind. That's amateur shit. I mean emotional pain. The slow, simmering, gnawing ache that starts in the heart and crawls out through the soul. I began disappearing. Mid-text. Mid-call. Mid-conversation. Gone. Sometimes for an hour. Sometimes a day. Sometimes a week. No warning. No explanation. I'd block him, then unblock him hours later with a "Hey babe, sorry, was busy." The first time, he was confused. The second, he was scared. By the third, he was trained. That's how easy it is to break someone. Once you know where the cracks are. But I wasn't just ghosting him. I was replacing myself with absence. I needed him to miss me so hard his skin itched. And it worked. He stopped sleeping. His voice got softer. His hands trembled when he touched me, like I might vanish if he moved too fast. He started asking things like, "Do you still want me? Am I doing this right? Is there someone else?" And each time he asked, I said nothing. Because silence is louder than any lie. The night he finally snapped, it was raining. Not the sexy cinematic kind of rain. The cold, ugly kind that soaks you through your shoes and makes the city smell like sewer and sadness. He showed up at my door drenched, shaking, eyes rimmed in red like he'd walked straight out of a breakdown. "You left me on read for 3 days," he whispered. I leaned against the doorway, robe slightly open, a smile playing on my lips. "So," he swallowed hard. I thought you were done with me." I tilted my head. "Would that kill you?" Silence. Then, softly, too softly, he said, "Maybe." And that was beautiful. I stepped aside. "Get in." He peeled off his wet clothes like a penitent sinner stripping off sin. I stood there watching, arms crossed, nipples hard from the draft and the thrill. When he was down to nothing, I led him into the living room. Not the bed, the floor. I handed him the collar and leash. Without a word, he knelt. I attached the leash and yanked him forward until he was beneath me. "Now beg." He looked up, lips trembling. "Please. I need to feel you. I need to taste you. I need to know I still exist." I dragged him into my heat. Made him work for it. Made him whimper. Made him choke and moan and thank me through a mouthful of me. I came. Twice. And left him untouched. When he tried to reach for his cock, I slapped his hand away. "What the fuck do you think this is?" His voice cracked. I'm sorry. "You're not here to get off," I said, wiping my fingers across his lips. "You're here to remind yourself who owns your orgasm." He nodded, broken and beautiful. But I wasn't done. I blindfolded him, tied his wrists, left him kneeling naked in the living room while I made dinner. Chicken, garlic rice, wine. I ate in front of him, dropped bites of food on the floor and made him lick them up, one at a time, like a fucking pet. He never complained, not once. And when I was done, I sat on his lap, straddled his thighs, and whispered in his ear, "Tell me what you'd give up for me." He didn't hesitate. "My friends. My job. My freedom. My sanity." I smiled. "Good." Then I slid my fingers down his chest, slow and deliberate, until I was wrapped around the part of him that used to have dignity. "Do you want to come?" "Yes," he gasped. "Please, please. I've been good." "You have," I whispered. "But good boys don't beg." Then I let go, got up, and left him tied there all night. When I came back in the morning, he was asleep on his knees, face bruised from the hardwood, cock still painfully hard. And still, he whispered my name like a prayer. That's when I knew it wasn't just sex anymore. It wasn't just control. It was religion, and I was his god. Chapter 5. Love is the lie that keeps them crawling. There's a moment in every power dynamic where the leash doesn't just restrain, it becomes the identity. Where the man stops pretending to be strong and starts begging to be ruined. Where his need stops being about sex or validation or even me and starts being about survival. That was Malik now. He wasn't just mine. He was nothing without me. And that's exactly where I wanted him. He used to have edges, boundaries, lines he wouldn't cross. Now, he didn't have lines, just scars. I turned his body into scripture, a Bible written in bruises and bite marks, praise etched in scratches across his chest. He wore them proudly. Marks of worship. Proof of suffering. I'd catch him in the mirror, touching the red rings on his wrists from the night I left him tied too long. He wouldn't cry anymore. Crying was too human. He'd just smile, like the pain was a love letter he got to reread every morning. And maybe it was. But this wasn't love. It was an ecosystem. A system where I fed off his desperation, and he thrived in my cruelty. One night, I wanted to see just how deep I'd carved into his sense of self. So I staged a scene. I invited him over. Told him to come at 8 p.m. sharp. He arrived early. Perfect. I opened the door wearing silk and sin. Red robe. No panties. Eyes cold. Behind me, another man. Taller. Louder. Shirtless. Hands around my waist like he owned it. Malik froze in the doorway. Pain flashed across his face like lightning. Then it settled into something worse, acceptance. I stared at him. "This is Darius," I said calmly. "He's joining us tonight." His lips parted. Not in shock. Not in outrage. Just confusion. "Joining us for what?" he asked softly. I stepped aside. "To watch." He didn't say no. He walked in, like a good boy. I led him to the chair in the corner and pushed him down. Hands on the armrest, I commanded. He obeyed. I tied his wrists. Darius raised an eyebrow. Damn, you weren't lying about him. I smiled. He's mine. And then, I put on a performance. Let Darius taste me. Touch me. Kiss me. Right in front of Malik. I moaned loud. Too loud. Louder than I needed to. And I watched him, his chest rising and falling like he couldn't breathe, tears streaking silently down his face, cock hard as stone, veins bulging in his arms as he fought the instinct to scream. But he didn't scream, because I never gave him permission. That night I came 3 times. Darius came once. Malik came never. And when it was over, I walked over to him, knelt between his legs, and whispered, "Still want me?" He nodded, trembling. "Say it. I want you," he choked. "Then prove it." I pulled Darius's cum-soaked condom from the floor, dangled it between my fingers, and said, "Clean up." His eyes widened, just a flicker. Then he nodded, and did it. Licked the mess off my thighs. Swallowed every drop. Didn't flinch once. Darius left in silence. Probably scared. Probably disgusted. I didn't care, because Malik passed the test. But that kind of test leaves residue. Even in me, I wasn't untouched by the filth I created. After Malik left, I sat in the dark, robe still open, body still tingling with power and guilt, and something I couldn't name. Something sick. I touched myself slowly, painfully, almost hating myself for it, but loving it more. Came hard. Cried harder. Because there was no turning back now. I wasn't training him anymore. I was destroying him. And the fucked up part? He thanked me for it. He started journaling. I never asked him to, but he showed it to me anyway. Pages and pages of manic poetry. I am hers. She owns my hunger. My mouth remembers her before my mind does. It was beautiful. Disturbing. Addicting. I started using his own words during our sessions, whispering them back while I had my fingers down his throat or my heel pressing into his chest. He started saying thank you before I even hurt him. He started asking for pain. Please. Please just use me. Punish me. I need it. I'll never leave. I'll never stop loving you. And that last part, that's what made me pause. Because I never asked for his love. I asked for his loyalty. His obedience. But love. That's messier. It clouds things. Blurs the line between master and slave. Love gives them hope. And hope is dangerous. So I began to chip at it. Subtly. Sharply. You don't love me. I said one night, sitting on his chest with my fingers wrapped around his neck. You love who I let you be around me. He tried to speak. I tightened. You love the leash. The rules. The structure. But me? You don't even know who the fuck I am. He nodded, tears streaming sideways into the pillow. And I knew I was right. Because love isn't real in this kind of relationship. What we had wasn't hearts and flowers. It was blood and ritual. Devotion built on domination. A dynamic that only works as long as I stay in control. As long as he stays broken. And he was breaking more every day. His job called me. Did you know that? His fucking job. His boss wanted to know if I'd seen him. Said he hadn't shown up in 2 weeks. I lied. Told her he was sick. Said I'd keep him resting. She thanked me. And Malik? He was on his knees beside me during that call, licking my toes, cock locked in a stainless steel cage I'd ordered online 3 days prior. That's where his career ended. At my feet. Where it belonged. Chapter 6. Hollow men make the best puppets. There's something strange that happens when you take everything from someone. Not just their pride. Not just their name or their freedom. But the core of them. The place in their soul where identity used to live. When that goes quiet. When you silence a man from the inside out. You start to hear your own echo in him. Every word he speaks. Every move he makes. Every breath he takes becomes a reflection of you. He doesn't just serve you. He is you. That's what Malik had become. A mirror. Fogged, cracked, warped, but still mine. I didn't just own him anymore. I was him. And that realization? That fucked with me in a way I didn't see coming. It was supposed to be fun. A game. A power trip that ended when I got bored. But I wasn't bored. I was obsessed. With the way his voice shook when I called his name. With how his fingers twitched when I took too long to touch him. With how he cried now, silently, shamelessly, as if pain was the only language he remembered. I used to think he was weak. Now I knew better. He was perfect. Because he didn't need a reason anymore. He just needed me. And I needed to see how far that would go. So I started digging. Deeper. Colder. Crueler. One night, I gave him a task. It wasn't sexual. It was psychological. "Delete your social media," I said casually, legs crossed on his lap as he knelt before me. "Everything. Gone." He blinked. "All of it. All of it. But my photography, my art." I leaned forward. "Is nothing without me." He didn't speak. He just took out his phone and started deleting. Account after account. Years of work. Memories. Followers. Gone in seconds. And when it was done, he looked up at me with those empty, devoted eyes and whispered, "I don't exist anywhere now, except here." I kissed his forehead. "Exactly." That same night, I took him out in public, collared, silent, obedient. I dressed him in black slacks, no underwear, with a plug inside him and the leash looped discreetly around my wrist. We went to a bookstore. I ran my fingers over spines of novels I didn't plan to buy while he followed behind me, close enough to smell my perfume, far enough to avoid suspicion. Every step he took pressed the plug deeper inside him. He was sweating, shaking, dying to speak, but he didn't, because I hadn't given him permission to make a sound. And when we got back to the car, I made him come, right there. No hands, no touching, just whispered filth in his ear as I ran one nail along the waistband of his pants and said, "You don't need friction to feel me." He came in his pants like a ruined thing, and I drove home in silence while he sat beside me, soaked, shivering, crying. He kept saying thank you, over and over again like a prayer. But the truth? It wasn't gratitude. It was surrender. The kind that has no end. That same week, I burned all his old clothes. Bags of t-shirts, shoes, that one denim jacket he swore was sentimental. Gone. I replaced them with things I picked. Tight black shirts, tailored slacks, nothing with logos. Nothing that screamed him. Because he didn't exist anymore. Not without me. I told him to stop speaking unless spoken to. He didn't utter a word for 5 whole days. When I finally said, "Good morning," he burst into tears, fell to his knees, wrapped his arms around my thighs like a shipwrecked man clinging to driftwood. I slapped him. Not hard, just enough to remind him that emotion without permission was a breach. He gasped, red blooming across his cheek. "I'm sorry," he whispered. I pulled his hair. "Be better." He nodded, tried to smile. Failed. That was the first time I realized he was disappearing. Not metaphorically. Literally. Malik was losing weight. He slept less. Ate less. Laughed never. His reflection was fading, like the longer he lived under me, the more translucent he became. And that should have scared me. But it didn't. It turned me on. Not in the obvious way. Not just between my legs. It turned on something else, something deeper. Something monstrous. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and find him kneeling beside the bed, just watching me. Eyes glossy. Hands trembling, whispering my name like a ghost moaning for release. Sometimes I'd let him climb into bed and lay at my feet. Sometimes I'd make him watch me fuck someone else. And every time he got quieter, smaller, more hollow. I started feeding him lines, literally feeding them. I'd write mantras on scraps of paper and make him chew and swallow them like communion. I am hers. I exist to serve. Pleasure is hers, pain is mine. And he ingested them like they were nourishment. And maybe for him they were. I watched his mind rot from the inside out, moral compass melted, purpose rewritten, loyalty redrawn in the shape of my silhouette. He no longer flinched at shame. He welcomed it. He no longer asked to be loved. He begged to be used. And me, I felt invincible, like a goddess, a puppet master with threads so deep, even his blood danced to my rhythm. But something was shifting in me too, something I didn't want to name. It was the silence after he left. The ache when I had no one to punish. The sick thrill that didn't feel like power anymore, but hunger. And hunger, left unchecked, becomes madness. One night, after a particularly brutal session, I had whipped him until his back was raw, made him crawl through the hallway on crushed glass I'd sprinkled for training. I stood over him while he lay bloody, breathless, and completely still. And I asked, "Why are you still here?" He didn't answer at first. Then, hoarse, he said, "Because I don't know who I am without your cruelty." And I came harder than I ever had. Right there, over him, because it was the truth. The purest truth he'd ever told me. And the most terrifying one. Because if he didn't know who he was without me, what the fuck would I be without him? Chapter 7. The death of the dominant is in the silence of the submissive. No one warns you what happens when you win. No one explains what it feels like when you've taken everything from someone. And there's nothing left to strip. No more lines to cross. No more boundaries to bend. No more shame to squeeze out of their spine. I thought the climax would feel like a coronation. I imagined myself on a throne of obedience, mallet curled at my feet, whimpering, bleeding, thankful. But the truth? Victory is silent, empty, haunting, and it doesn't feel like power. It feels like loss. Because once you've burned someone to ash, there's nothing left to play with. No fight to extract. No resistance to test. No soul to destroy. You become queen of a kingdom made of corpses. And that's where I found myself. Alone. Staring at the husk of a man I once molded like clay, and now couldn't even recognize. He didn't blink without my permission. He didn't eat unless I fed him. He didn't breathe unless I touched him first. I thought I wanted that. Total control. Complete erasure. A man reduced to instinct, trained, broken, owned. But as I sat on the edge of the bed, watching Malik sleep like a corpse, collar still locked around his neck, wrists bruised from last night's restraints, I felt nothing. No hunger. No heat. No thrill. Just stillness. And the kind of silence that screams. For weeks, I ignored it. Doubled down. Made the sessions more brutal. Tighter ropes. Less mercy. I brought strangers into the dynamic again. New men. Bigger. Rougher. Made Malik watch. Made him film. Made him clean up after. He never said a word. Just obeyed. And I hated him for it. I hated that I missed the fire in his eyes when we first met. I hated that he no longer flinched when I insulted him. I hated that he didn't cry anymore. Because that meant he wasn't feeling. And if he wasn't feeling, what the fuck was I dominating? It wasn't until the night I screamed at him, for being too quiet, too compliant, too fucking perfect, that I realized what I'd done. I had killed the man. All that was left was a puppet. Wires. Routines. Hollow rituals. So I tried to break the cycle. I took him out. A fancy restaurant. Our first in months. No leash. No rules. Just us. Let's pretend, I said. He tilted his head. Pretend we're normal. He blinked once. Twice. Then nodded. But he didn't know how to pretend. Not anymore. He sat across from me, hands folded, eyes lowered, waiting for commands I refused to give. I tried conversation. He answered like a robot. I tried flirting. He smiled like a corpse. I reached across the table, touched his cheek, whispered, "Talk to me." And his eyes, those beautiful eyes, just stared. Empty. That night, I took him home. Undressed him. Sat on his lap. Straddled him. Stared into his soul and said, "Tell me you want me." He opened his mouth. But nothing came out. I slapped him. Not for disobedience. But for the unbearable silence. "Fucking say it, Malik." He flinched. Blinked. Shook. And then he said it. "I don't know what I want anymore." 7 words. 7 bullets. Right through my chest. I pushed off him, stumbled backward, breath catching like I'd been punched. Because he meant it. Because he wasn't lying. Because I had finally broken him beyond repair. And the sickest part? I did it on purpose. All of it. Every slap, every orgasm withheld, every cruel word, every manipulation, I designed it to bend him. But I went too far. And now he was mine. But he wasn't real. So I did something I never thought I'd do. I told him to leave. At first, he didn't move. I had to say it twice. "Go. Malik. Leave." He stood. Stumbled. Confused. He turned to look at me like a kicked dog, unsure if the hand would pet or punish. But I didn't say anything. I just stood there, arms folded, heart thundering, watching him walk out the door with the slow, shaky steps of someone exiting a coma. And then, I collapsed. Right there, on the cold hardwood, the same floor I used to make him crawl on, begging for my touch. I cried. Ugly. Violent. Animalistic sobs that shook me to the core. Because I didn't just lose control. I lost him. And the worst part? I missed it. I missed the weight of his body under mine. I missed the tears. The way his breath caught when I whispered commands. The way he begged. But I missed something else, too. I missed who I was in those moments. The queen. The monster. The goddess. Without him, I didn't know who the fuck I was anymore. So I tried to move on. Tried to find someone else to break. But no one bled like Malik. No one begged the way he did. No one gave me everything and then some. So I spiraled. Slipped into old habits. Random hookups. Half-assed doming. But it all felt cheap. Forced. Because the truth is, when you create something perfect, nothing else will ever measure up. Weeks passed. Then months. And just when I started to forget his scent, his silence, the way he used to whimper in his sleep. He came back. Unannounced. Collar in hand. Eyes sharper. Jaw tighter. But there was something different. Something dangerous. He walked into my apartment like he'd never left. placed the collar on the table, looked me in the eye, and said, "I want you to wear it." I laughed, out loud, but he didn't smile. "I want to own you now." My stomach dropped. My throat tightened. I tried to speak, but nothing came out. Because in his voice, I heard me. In his stare, I saw everything I had trained, perfected, weaponized, and now it was aimed at me.